Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles McLennan, Dave Festchuk, the Toronto Star, our buddy Mike Johnson. Join us here in about 5 minutes. We've got Stephen Caldwell coming up. We're talking some footy with Stephen Caldwell.
Love it.
Always love catching up with Stephen. He'll give us the full breakdown of a big match last night, man. Canada keeps rolling. Keeps rolling.
Speaking of big plays, you know, obviously the Jonathan David goal was awesome, and we played that audio of, you know,
Davies.
You know, Davies, yeah. Davies going nuts on the Twitch feed, which is just great. But Noodles, I got to say, like, I thought the turning point in the game went to the goalkeepers union, man, and I'm sure you appreciated it. That Milan Borjan save on that header off the free kick a couple minutes before the David goal was just massive.
I always say, like, you know, goaltending is a tough position, but I can't even imagine it in soccer. Like, you just feel like you're so up against it. The net feels like there's a giant house behind you. You're trying to guard, you know, some of the goaltenders are so athletic. They have great reads, and you need a little bit of luck here or there. But when a goaltender makes an unbelievable save, I mean, I'm sure it fires the team up. But if I'm watching it, I'm mesmerized. Like, I'm like, holy smokes, is that? Because they're just, as a shooter, you have so much net to see. And when the goaltender makes a save and has, you know, great anticipation or great reads, like, it's really cool for me. And some of the goalies are big and rangy and, you know, are super athletic. Like, they're,
but there's only so much you can get, right? You can't have, the nets are massive. Like, it really
is. Massive. It's ridiculous how big it is. Yeah. I just always felt like that was one of the most, you know, unfair situations in pro sports, where you're being a goalie in soccer, where, you know, you look at lacrosse and the net is tiny and the goaltender's got giant padding on, and they still, like, bury the shots, like, you know, bounce shots. And I think lacrosse is such a skilled sport. But I look at soccer and the guys are curving the balls from far out, and a goaltender, I just feel like on so many situations, have no chance.
There is no real comparison, I think, sport to sport, because there are plays in soccer where you have no shot. Like, if it's placed perfectly, and I know you could say that with hockey, but really, even a perfect shot can be caught, can get a tip of the stick on it or whatever it is. Where with soccer, it's just not the same thing. And you're right, that save when it was 1-0. To keep it there, and then it's 2-0. Then at that point, you know they're getting their points. They're getting 3 points, and they're coming home. And Canada's got 5 matches left. And I was texting with my buddy last night, who's been a huge soccer fan his whole life. Always, you know, he's a big United fan and a big Canadian national team fan. And he's like, "I'm going. Like, I'm getting to Qatar."
That's
a commitment. I mean, listen, you can't complain if they're going to go for the first time since 86. If the World Cup was on the moon, you'd be like, fine, we'll make it work. I had to look it up last night. It's an 8-hour time difference, which means hopefully they can play night games, and then you're looking at like a noon, early afternoon matches here. But if it's at 4 in the morning, it's at 4 in the morning. You know, if it's at 6 in the morning, so be it. That's what you get with the international sport. And the World Cup will be here in 2026, so we won't have to worry about any of those issues once the World Cup is here a little bit later into the decade. But Stephen Caldwell a little bit later in the hour, and how confident he feels in Canada playing the United States on Sunday in Hamilton and them staying atop the table and feeling good about punching that ticket to the World Cup. So we'll catch up with Stevie a little bit later on. MJ will join us here in a moment. Speaking of goalies, I guess it was announced today that Peter Mrazek will play tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if they announced it or didn't kind
sounds,
of
sounds like Nylander announced it.
Willie Mrazek's
gone.
You know what? I was thinking about it, and I don't know who I was talking to today. I think it's the right call. Like, why not? Like, you've got to get Mrazek back into the fold and playing regularly. Detroit plays tonight in Pittsburgh, and then they play the Leafs tomorrow at home. So Detroit's going to be in a back-to-back situation. So you're already looking at a team that, you know, is farther down in the standings that might be tired. Like, and a former organization.
Exactly. That's what I see, yeah.
It seems like the perfect fit to start Mrazek in that situation.
I agree. And I think, do they have a back-to-back with jerseys?
They do.
Tuesday?
Monday, Tuesday. So Mrazek's going to get probably two of the next three,
yeah.
I would think. And it's a smart play. It's a smart play. They have to get him going, not because of more of Jack. It's getting him going and feeling good about his game, and do take some of the stress off of Jack's body and his mind, like mentally. You know, this is the most games he's played at the National Hockey League level in a season, and we're not halfway. I mean, you're just coming up on halfway. So I think it's the, if you're mapping things out, and I know I asked Sheldon yesterday, and he knew he wasn't going to give us a full answer. He just said, like, we try to map it out, but in a perfect world, you have to get Mrazek going. Start him. I think Mrazek starts Saturday and Tuesday in, I don't know, the home and home. I'm not sure if that's in Jersey on Tuesday. I'd have to look. But it's a home and home on Monday, Tuesday. So,
He's getting two of the next three games. Clearly.
Yeah, he'll get
you're going to play him in a back-to-back. Campbell's not going in the back-to-back. And because he's a former Red Wing, and I think he broke into the league in Detroit, he's got history with that team. Last time he played last weekend, he looked good. You know, on the island, he played well. He looked comfortable. He's a good goalie. They didn't sign him 1 year at $750 because they think he sucks. They gave him 3 years at $380. They committed to him. And if they want to move on from him – you know, you got to let them kind of get the wheels going here and create maybe some sort of a marketplace. And I don't anticipate them trading him this season between now and the deadline, but I think in the summer it seems like it's reasonable to expect if they reload with Jack Campbell. Here's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What's your read on the role Mrazek will play with this team the rest of the way?
Well, I think you guys are on it, right? Like, he's going to be playing not quite half, but, you know, probably 40% of the rest of the games.
Right.
And I think they're going to try to make sure Jack gets as much rest as he needs, time off both mentally and physically. Like, I think whatever Campbell needs, that's what Mrazek is there to provide. And, you know, be sharp and in case something happens, injury or otherwise, be a viable alternative. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing that he's getting the start, I guess, tomorrow, and then, man, they're going to split the back-to-backs. I mean, he makes twice as much money as Jack Campbell. He's a good goalie, just when he can stay healthy and get into a rhythm. He just hasn't had that happen this year. So, I would expect we'd see a lot of him so long as he can stay healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be necessary. I mean, we keep referencing the upcoming schedule, but it's a reality, and the Leafs know it. Like, they're going to be playing a lot of games in a tight window.
Yeah.
And Jack Campbell, his stats are not what they were earlier in the season. I think he's entitled to a window just like everyone else is. You have ups and downs. You know, he's not as sharp as he was earlier in the year. But I have come to a conclusion with him where I expect him to bounce back and look very good statistically based on the eye test. And what benefits him greatly, and we were laughing about this early in the week, is that even with those stats, he's winning every game. He's 5-1-1 or something in his last seven starts with an .889 save percentage. That's pretty good. Like, pretty good goal support.
The team's playing pretty well, but I wonder, Noodles could probably answer this. So, like, you're absolutely right. No one for a second is suggesting, you know, Jack Campbell is a problem. But it's been, you know, a few weeks where he's
Two weeks.
And, like, I'm not even talking about he's not a .940 goalie because, like, he's not that.
No,
he was for a couple months, but he's not really that. But it's been a few weeks where he's been around a .900 goaltender. So how long is long enough that, you know, he's allowed a dip, but, you know, at some point, he's got to get it back to a .920 guy. Like, how long, Noodles, is too long before it is a bit of a concern of some kind?
So it won't go – I'm not going to go the Koskinen situation where you had 15 games with him and Smith, because that was, you know – but you take a look at – the difference is Joe from the Bridge just ran a board. He's 5-1-1 in those starts. So you're winning games, and when you're winning, it kind of covers up. If they were losing some tight games and, you know, you needed a save here or there, it shines a light on it. What I would say is that he has the luxury. They're going to get Mrazek going. He's going to probably play Monday night, feel good about his game. I think it's more about the process. Like, you're right. I don't think he's a .940 goaltender, but he's not an .88 either. The dust settles, if he's at .920, I don't think anybody will complain.
That's great.
You know, league, exactly. But it's
but
it's,
if he ends up at a .920, Noodles, that means he'll have been .900 for, you know, basically,
for a while.
You know, 3 months.
Right.
I don't know.
It is because the amount of games that he's involved in, if you have an off night, it doesn't move that much south. But if you have a good night, it doesn't move that much north because he's kind of entrenched there. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I always say, and you guys can concur, if he's stopping, let's say 92, I pulled that number just randomly. I'm hoping for higher for him. But if he's stopping 92% of the shots, it's when he makes those saves. That's the key that I've watched this year that has been so important, because there have been times where there's been pockets of the game with the Leafs where maybe they've had a lull and three or four big saves by Jack or a timely save, and then the team snaps back into it. That's the difference what I look at. If you get 920 goaltending, you know, throughout across the board, I think you're pretty happy, but it's the timely saves I always go back to. And when Jack was on his game, it's that breakaway save at the right time. It's a backdoor play that just settles everything down. You're like, this guy has our back. And in the last couple of weeks, maybe there's been some bad luck. You know, Engvall hits, what, Spezza's skate? I don't think he could do that again if he tried the other night. Like, you've been some bad luck plays, a little redirect here or there. It is his time for a lull, but I'm not concerned about it big picture. This last thing, I'm getting long-winded. This is the most games he's played in an NHL season at the NHL level, and we're not halfway there. What is he going to be? Do you want him to be a 60-game starter, or do you want him to be 55? Like, that's where they have to look at this, too. That's right.
I think it'll depend on the race, though, too, right? Like, we had Sheldon on the other day. Sheldon Keefe was on yesterday. And within the conversation of messaging for the playoffs, he basically said, we're messaging more for the race that we're in right now. Like, they feel like they're in somewhat of a playoff race because of the division, and you're trying to keep up with Florida and Tampa and try to keep Boston behind you. So I think that's the calculation, Johnny, is, okay, are we prepping for game one, or are we prepping for hopefully playing at home for game one? Like, what's more important?
They're going to try to serve both needs, right? I mean, I think they're going to try to track down home ice, or maybe first, and Sheldon has been very clear that they're not conceding that to anybody right now. But also with a mind, like, you know, they're not going to play Jack Campbell, you know, 11 of the last 13 games to try to get home ice. Like, I think it's probably more important to get him as right as he can be, regardless of how they finish up. Because, again, Mrazek's supposed to be good. Like, we can acknowledge Jack Campbell's been better, but Mrazek's supposed to give you a guy who you don't need to worry about hiding, or you don't want to play him too much, or where you're going to start him. He's supposed to be beyond all of that, so he's supposed to give you options down the stretch. And I think they'll probably do both, but it does feel like, I know Boston's good and they have tormented Toronto, but it does feel like Boston is not as good as Toronto, Tampa, or Florida. So if you can win the division, you know, pick your poison. But I think I'd rather play Boston than Tampa or Florida, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So Mike, big topic in the dog days of the season, granted, and it may not turn out to be anything, but what do you make of Sheldon Keefe's continued experiment with trying to spread out, you know, the big boys among the top three lines? Today's practice, again, you had Matthews essentially going it alone up there with Bunting and Kasha. Then it's Tavares, Marner, Mikheyev. And then the third line, Willie Nylander's down there alongside Kampf and Kerfoot. Do you like this?
I don't mind experimentation. I don't mind trying different things so that you know what works when you load up the top six. Like, you've seen it now for, you know, 35 games, and it's worked quite well. You know who plays well with each other, who the third guy can be for the first line as well as the second. So I don't mind it. And, like, I would disagree with Sheldon, and, like, I'm not sure how much offense David Kampf can provide. Like, I think he absolutely has been a stud defensively, lockdown guy. But, you know, if you're asking him, like, I've read Sheldon say he's got more to give. He can help Willie and Alex Kerfoot create offense. I don't know if I believe that, but I guess there's no better way to find out than actually have him prove it one way or the other. So, I don't mind it. I mean, as long as William Nylander, if you're going to call his line the third line, and I guess you'd have to, as long as he's not playing 14 minutes again. Like, as long as he gets his 18, 19, 20, like he should, like he deserves to, then, you know, I don't mind the experimentation, different looks that you could go to if you need them.
Well, MJ, you know, sticking with that theme, did it feel like that's how it was the other night? Like, the lines were in the blender. felt like 5 minutes in.
They all played a lot of minutes.
They played a lot. Yeah. But you looked up and it was like, okay, Nylander's out there with Matthews and Marner. Like, you know, like he was moving them around. Like, I think we make a lot of it because it's practice and in a perfect world. But, you know, Sheldon's not a guy who just opens the door and pushes out line 1 to 4. Like, he's constantly, you know, adjusting on the fly. So I don't put as much stock into it, you know, lines in practice the day before a game, because the minute the game starts and he sees that a guy's going or he gets an offensive zone draw and he wants to load up, the guy's out there. So, you know, Nylander's going to get his 19 minutes and, you know, Marner.
How can you be disappointed with the other night, though? That was one of the most dominant performances they've had all
great.
Year.
They're fantastic.
Yeah. They
but I did like Noodle. Like, Noodle makes a good point because, like, you're seeing Austin Matthews take offensive zone draws with Kerfoot and Nylander, and you'd see Kampf sometimes go and play defensively, and then after a penalty kill, you'd see Nylander, Tavares, and Matthews, like just random blendering to try to get opportunistic situations for his offensive guys. So it wasn't quite like, 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4, off you go. That was probably the conversation he probably had. If William Nylander was going to be disappointed, saying, hang on, it seems like I've got the short end here, I imagine Sheldon could say, listen, you'll get yours, don't you worry. You're going to get plenty of ice time. You're going to play with the big guys. Even though you don't have one of the other big four to play with, you're going to get your ice time with them anyways and your opportunities to create points. And there was a lot of penalties through the first couple periods, so it was hard to get a real read on what the rotation was going to look like. As long as those guys get their ice time, then it should be able to work out.
Looking back on it now, when Paul Maurice announced that he was stepping away, it was a pretty shocking story. I mean, I guess people around the team maybe saw it coming, and based on some conversations he had with management in the summer, maybe it was not premeditated, but a possibility at that point. But now I'm wondering what he saw, what he knew, that the rest of the world is just picking up on, because Lowry's trying to figure it out, but they're losing a lot of games, a lot of games. Hellebuck is not playing as well as he can. He hasn't been awful by any means, but
he's not the problem, but he's not hiding the problem.
He's not
anymore.
Hiding the issues.
Yeah, he hasn't been the solution. He started 13 games in a row, and I don't know if there's a game like, you know, like I say, a goaltender steals a game here or there, and Hellebuck's played a lot. He isn't the problem there. I mean, they are depleted on the back end, but everyone's got an excuse, so it's you've got to find a way. They've lost 6 in a row, and you know, they
and
still
the division's
really
running away
players,
from them, too. That's the bigger concern, Noodles, for me. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, like, those California teams have played so many more games, but they're losing. And they're going to, like, when you look at the numbers and you say, okay, when Edmonton catches Anaheim, they're probably right there with them or close or with L.A. Can Winnipeg catch, not catch in Colorado, clearly, but can they catch Nashville, St. Louis, and Minnesota?
No.
I don't think they can.
No.
I think those teams are gone.
They're playing for second wild card is what they're playing for.
Right.
And they got to pass Dallas in their own division as well. So it's trouble. I think, you know what's interesting is I wonder, maybe Paul Maurice was onto something. They did different voice, but maybe the team wasn't just as good as he thought they might be. But I wonder if just Paul Maurice had been there so long. He was so entrenched in everything that they did that it's a bigger adjustment to somebody else, even if that somebody else was from the staff, than they imagined. Like, just a different voice, system play, you know, game management, how he interacts with the star players, what he demands of Scheifele and Wheeler. Like, those guys thrived, certainly offensively, under Paul Maurice, and he coached them to do that. I just wonder if it was his absence is being felt more than just a normal coaching change because of how long he was there and because he was such a prominent influence on that team.
Yeah.
So, MJ, speaking of Canadian teams where things have been pretty dire this season, looking up a little bit in Edmonton of late with 3 straight wins, but in your mind, what can Evander Kane bring to this picture with the Edmonton Oilers?
Well, he's a good player. I mean, like, you know, he's a very good player. He was almost a point-a-game guy last year, scored at almost a 40-goal pace. So he's going to be physical. He's going to be fast. He can play in the top six. He can play in the power play. He'll give you options on the, you know, with Draisaitl or McDavid, or if they want to throw Nugent Hopkins, they just give them more options. I've seen him play firsthand with good players. I remember, you know, I watched Evander a lot playing in Winnipeg, where he was effective, right? He scored goals, he did his thing. But he was very much a straight-line guy, not a lot of offensive imagination in his game. He didn't have to. He was just like a powerful guy that could be effective going in straight lines. And I wasn't sure. He saw him play at a World Championship, and he was playing with Getzlaff and Perry, two guys who don't play in straight lines anymore because they're slow and they like to crisscross. And, I'm like, I don't know if that's going to work on the same line because, you know, they just, I don't know if they'll mesh. And I was wrong. Like, Evander Kane fit in with those guys really, really well. So I think his kind of north-south game will be fine with the east-west game of Draisaitl or McDavid or that kind of creativity. Like, he'll figure it out, and he'll bring, a well beyond a $2 million player to their lineup, which I guess is the whole point. That's why they went and signed him.
Well, that's the challenge is you know, he's going to get an opportunity right away. You had injuries to RNH and to Hyman, obviously, who was hurt, and then at COVID. Now they're back. And if you're looking at their roster, it looks a lot different than it did 10 days ago.
A week ago. Remember that snapshot I sent you guys? I was like, what the hell is this team?
I was David looking at it. I had, you know, That's Hockey. You know, Johnny, you and I are on it later. Build a board. Like, the team looks so much different now with you add a guy like Kane. If, say, he plays with McDavid and Puljujärvi, then – you know, Hyman, Draisaitl, and Yamamoto, Fogel, RNH, and Cassian. Like, now they can have that kid, Ryan McLeod, who's 21, play on their fourth line with, you know, Derek Ryan and Perlini, or, you know, move short. Like, they're, you know, now all of a sudden it's like, okay, you have a nine that looks more balanced. And, you know, you take two of those guys when RNH and Hyman weren't in there, and it's like, man, you're piecing together. Like, if anything, Kane adds to the depth of a top six because of his skill set and his unique skill set.
Yeah, 100%. It's just options and bodies and good bodies that would make a lot of sense. And we'll see. I wonder, you know, he's been playing a little bit with the Barracuda, but he's been off. It seems like he had COVID and he went back to Canada and he's been suspended.
Right.
So while he's been skating, I don't know. I have no idea how in shape or his timing. Like, I can't imagine if he's, I don't know if he's in, I think he's in Vancouver, like, you know, skating with whoever, UBC or junior team or the Giants or whatever it might be. Like, it might take him a little bit to kind of get up and running. So might have to be patient a little, because he's got to jump right in apparently tomorrow night, right, against Montreal.
Yeah, he's playing tomorrow.
Which now, I don't want to kick them while they're down, but maybe Montreal is the right team to go up against, because they're having a tough go of it. And speaking of tough goes, Noodles.
Yes.
Have you dusted off your pads? Have you seen what's happening in Buffalo right now?
I had somebody send me a note. Can you play? I just saw Louie on Twitter, like, tweet something out about the I don't know if you saw this, MJ, on Strombone. He's like, me hearing when the Buffalo Sabres have zero healthy goalies. He's got Tretiak doing drills in the field. So funny.
I love it. Roberto Luongo, get him up there.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I'm friends with Curtis McElhinney, and I saw C-Mac tweet at them going, I'll give you a couple games, because he just retired. And
right.
I talked to him the other day. He's hanging out in Colorado. He's always in fantastic shape. I that's a guy that I would take a flyer on. The guy played recently, won a cup, and just, you know, didn't hook on. But if you're looking for somebody, like, man, oh, man,
Buffalo's
like, I feel
nothing.
Bad.
They got nobody. They have no goalies.
Nobody. Because was it Hauser just got added to COVID, right?
Hauser, and then Dell suspended. Like, Craig Anderson hasn't played in forever, and he's 40 years old. They're like, he's not really ready to go, but do they have to just throw him in? Because, like, literally they do not have another goaltender available. Like, give me somebody from Canisius College. Something. Somebody has got to strap some. Marty Biron's around that team all the time. Somebody. It'll be fascinating to see what shakes out.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I mean, something's got to give. Like, the games have got to go on. You got to.
Yeah, they're not going to postpone anything. Like,
no. I mean,
figure it out.
You got to figure it out. You got to figure it out. And then you wonder who they're going to face. Like, Anaheim's on the East Coast. Can you imagine Zegras up against, like, a college kid net, the kind of move that he'll try to pull off?
Al's brother. He's got Al's brother in net. And Zegras takes that, what is it, the lacrosse style play around that. MJ, we were talking about that earlier. It's such an unbelievable play at a high rate, like the speed of it. And, you know, as a goaltender, it's tough to defend. Like, I think you are going to see goaltenders now try and come up with a way to combat it if you do see it developing. But you just, it's so hard to see it developing because he does it at such a smooth and fast rate. I do say one thing. If you look at Savard, I think the move defensively is to slash his stick.
Of course.
Correct? Right?
Yeah.
But Savard missed it. He went inside the post instead of coming across the body.
Yeah.
But it's such a, like, I think people, it just surprises people. Like, this guy doing
this
right now?
How do you prepare for it? No one prepares for that. No one sees that.
So, yeah, and I think, like, the fact that he's picking it up as the goalie is going from his left post to his right post. So he doesn't even really spot his stick kind of sliding underneath it. So he's like, you know, he's just playing it normally. And I think the other part about why it can make sense to do is that, generally speaking, defensive zone coverages are not taught to charge guys behind the net. They kind of hang on the post and wait for him to come up from behind the net, then they go get him. But now this makes him a threat from behind the net, which is, you know, something that defensive zone coverages are not really designed to protect against. So I think just the threat of it might open up more opportunities because now all of a sudden maybe, you know, Savard's like, you know, I got to go meet him behind the net and not wait out here in front because this is a scoring threat. But my final thought is, like, do you remember when, like, wow, maybe like 2007 and 8, when Pavel Datsyuk would occasionally pull the puck through his legs and shoot it, you know, like change the angle, score some goals that way? And we were all like, oh, my God, like Merrick Malik's shootout goal. I was like, oh, my God. And now we got Brian Boyle, the oldest of old school guys, growing through his legs in front of the net. Like, I think know. That's where this Michigan goal is headed. I think Austin Matthews has it go through his mind once a game. Like, enough guys will be able to do it. I'm not going to discount how amazing it is. It's always amazing. But, like, at some point, it's not even that unique anymore because I did a game last night with Carolina. Svechnikov tried it last night. Like, guys try it or it runs their minds all the time. You go to any bantam peewee practice, and these little kids are ripping it off like it's nobody's business. Like, I think it's going to get as common as, like, shooting the puck through your legs. It's like, oh, yeah, there it is. There's the Michigan again because enough guys and the guys coming up are going to be able to do it that much better and faster that it will no longer be kind of mind-blowing, like super hard and amazing, but not so unique because it'll just happen more often.
Yeah, I think then it will lead to a couple of different conversations. The coach telling the guy either you have the green light or you don't, because that's coming, right? Like the Willie Mays Hayes, nice try, Hayes, don't ever do it again. Because if it's a guy on the fourth, you know, if it's a guy on the right. fourth line trying, you're like, what the hell do you think you're doing? You can't do it. Don't try to do it. I just want you to cycle the puck and get the hell off the ice.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
the second is how you defend it. I don't think it should be considered a slash if you whack a stick. Like if you got the puck on your tape and you're bringing it up towards
right.
the,
of course,
like,
you can slash the stick, absolutely.
But if you break his stick or so, I don't want to see 2 minutes. Like you
what
want to try it, nice
what
smack
if you miss
it.
The stick?
Well,
and
that's
grab him right in the midsection.
That's dangerous.
Right?
That it might be 2 minutes. There, I can
right.
listen to you on that. But you know what I'm saying? Like someone's going to smack a stick, break it, and then the guy's going to look for a penalty. And I think the response should be: you tried the move. What do you want the guy to do? He's got to be able to defend it.
Wow.
Somehow.
I agree. That's the next step is how to defend that because they are going to be working on that. It might be a play that only happens, what, you know, 1 in 100, but you guys are going to figure out how to defend that, or if they see it developing, what are you going to do?
Right.
I mean, you know, I played with a guy one time. I'm not going to say his name, but he went to dump the puck in, and he shot it straight up, and he put himself offside. And a guy on our bench was like, gee, who gave this guy a jersey?
And it
was like, tell stories about Kelly Chase. And I know who that is. I know who that is.
Do not say the name.
Don't tweet.
The name, please. But, I mean, the guy went to dump it in. The puck went straight up, and he put himself offside. Like, he's not trying that move whatsoever.
No. I'd love to be in the room for the sit down. Can you explain that to me, please? Old school coach, what the hell do you think you're doing? Anyway, all right, Johnny, enjoy the weekend, buddy. We'll do it early next week.
All right, guys, have a great weekend.
There's Mike Johnson, Absolutely. Our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com. Our buddy Stephen Caldwell in about 15 minutes on Canada picking up 3 points. Down in Honduras. They got 5 matches left, and they're real close to punching a ticket to the World Cup. So we'll catch up with Steven in about 15. James Duthie's still to come. Al's brother. Tremendous information and picks in about an hour from now. Dave Festchuk of the Store in here with Jamie Noodles McLennan. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. So something's going on down in Australia, man. These players are just hating on the umps. And it was Medvedev's turn. It was Shapovalov's, obviously, earlier in the week. And Medvedev was going nuts about the ump and the calls, and he called him a small cat. What the hell that means? Well, I think I do actually know what that means. But
right.
Yet he ended up winning the match. So he's going to the finals, and he's playing Nadal. And Nadal's got a chance to win the Aussie Open for the second time. I think he's lost four straight finals in the Australian Open. But no Djokovic, no Federer. Medvedev's a hell of a player, though, number two ranked player in the tournament. But, yeah, that Shapovalov stuff from earlier in the week, I was talking with more people once we got off the air about him calling the chair ump corrupt. And, like, that's probably a bridge too far, admittedly. I like the passion, and I like going at Nadal in the special treatment. I have no issues with that. Like, I get you want to treat a legend like a legend. He deserves respect. But if he's constantly getting preferential treatment, I have no problem with being angry about that or calling it out. But calling the chair ump and the officials of the tournament corrupt maybe won't help you. Probably
no,
won't
good.
Help you.
It hurts you, man. I'm telling you, man. He's already got the reputation, right? He you know, he had the unfortunate incident with the ball that what
the chair
right
ump
to the eye, the,
took
right
a guy's
to the eye.
Eye
of the chair ump.
Which that one was, hurt.
Yeah, that one hurt, and it was uncalled for. And it, you know, look, I mean, these umpires are human, right?
Yeah.
You could. Well, it's an understatement to say it's uncalled for.
Yeah, I think someone, a tennis ball off the face at rapid pace is probably uncalled
slightly
for.
Uncalled for. I love it.
Just
but
yeah.
The thing is, the chair ump, what role are they playing outside of policing the timing of things? Like, it's all technology anyway in tennis. Like, they've been largely neutralized chair umps. Like, it's not, you know, the line umps, and the sport is taken on technology, I think, in a better fashion and a more appropriate fashion than any other sport, because it is so black or white. It's either you're in or you're out. There's no gray area in terms of where the ball lands. So where's the corruption outside of demanding a timely, you know, fashion for a serve or being set or in between games or sets or whatever, you know, medical breaks, bathroom breaks? What else are they doing? It's, you know, it's like a lifeguard. They're basically a lifeguard, right? So, yeah. I don't know. That's the one thing I don't know how – I guess what I'm saying is I don't know how big of an issue it will be for Shapovalov, because the technology has no emotion. You get the ball in, there's nothing the chair ump can do. It's in, it's in. It's out, it's out.
Right.
So,
yeah,
just
in some ways,
reputation.
You're right, Hayes. I mean, if you want to go – if you want to take the contrary view, you know, John McEnroe made a pretty nice living being the ultimate brat on the court, right?
Right.
And throwing tantrums and acting like a complete lunatic. And if Shapovalov wants to be, you know, kind of McEnroe 2.0 and be that, you know, terrible presence out there who really should act a little classier with a little more decorum, but just chooses not to because that's who he is, you know, there'll be a fan base for that. There will be.
But the thing is with McEnroe, he won. Right? Like, at some point, Shapovalov's got to win slams, and you've got to move up the rankings. It's just like Kyrgios. Like, Kyrgios, you're just like, this guy's a joker, man. Like, he doesn't win anything. Everyone talks about his talent, but all he does is snap and lose it and act like a goofball. Where McEnroe did it, McEnroe was petulant and a brat and all that, but then he was also, I believe, the number one player in the world that won a bunch of slams.
Yeah. So won a lot of slams, exactly.
Yeah.
No, you
got to
win. Yeah.
You got to win.
You got to back it up.
Yeah, for it to be somewhat endearing or gain some support as like a heel or, you know, someone who plays that bad boy role, you got to win. You got to win. And Shapovalov has won early in tournaments but has not broken through. So, you know, that'll be the next step for him for sure. Canada goes down to Honduras, wins a match in Honduras for the first time, I think, since 1986. Like,
amazing.
This is kind of history. These are the pillars that have been standing for a long time that are being broken down by this current group. And John Herdman's team, they went down there and performed. And it wasn't necessarily the prettiest match from start to finish, but it was the result you're looking for. They get 3 points. They stay atop the standings. And they're in a very good spot with the Americans in Hamilton on Sunday. So we'll come back and catch up with Stephen Caldwell, our TSN soccer analyst, get his take on the game last night. How would he compare the greatness of the Jonathan David goal last night to the one with Alphonso Davies earlier in the group stage or earlier in the qualifying stage, that goal he scored against Panama at BMO? And what can we expect on Sunday when Canada plays the U.S. in Hamilton. So we'll catch up with Stephen Caldwell, break down the national team. We'll do that next. All right, James Duthie will join us in about 20 minutes. Big Niners fan, and I'm sure he's preparing for another quality weekend out of Jimmy G and the Niners. Feels a lot like their team a couple years ago that went to the Super Bowl. They're healthy. They're physical. They got weapons. Debo Samuel, probably the best number one weapon left in the playoffs, and that's saying something considering Tyreek Hill's still playing and Jamar Chase is still playing and Kelsey's playing and Cooper Kupp is playing. Just Debo Samuel's such a different beast. But there's a lot of talent still kicking in the NFL playoffs. So we'll get to that more coming up in about 20 minutes. Al's brother with his picks as well. We'll go back and forth. Two games to play this weekend. So we'll catch up with Al's brother. But I think the country's buzzing, and it's been buzzing for quite some time now. Canada heads down to Honduras and picks up a win in Honduras for the first time since 1986, which really says something about our national team. Like, they didn't go to Brazil and win for the first time. Honduras has been an issue for them for a long, long time.
Yeah,
and
got beat 8-1 down there 10 years ago.
In 2012, 8-1. I remember going on the air the next day and not being the biggest soccer guy in the world and realizing that's probably not a good sign of where our program is. Here's our buddy Stephen Caldwell, our TSN soccer analyst. When you hear a stat like that, Stephen, what do you make of it, what this Canadian men's team is doing here and the tone that they're setting, the fact that they're going down to Honduras, a place that has really caused them a lot of problems for the better part of 25, 30 years, and they walk out of there with 3 points?
Yeah, well, we know this is a different group, Brian. We know this is a motivated team and a group of individuals whose confidence has been growing as they've been building this spirit and this culture. And so we were optimistic that they could go in to Honduras and El Salvador and Panama and Costa Rica, these places, and get good results. But I don't think that any of us expected them to go in there and play in the manner that they did with such confidence and to control the game. There was probably a 10-minute spell where they were up against it. But apart from that, they had complete control. And when you look back at the highlights of the night, obviously the goals are amazing, but when you look at the moments where Canada were a little bit wasteful, actually, they could have been even more clinical. The score could have been 4 or 5, and that just tells you how good this team are and how far they've come in recent years.
Well, the goal by Jonathan David last night, that's one that's being played on highlight reels around the world. That was just a phenomenal goal in terms of the pass, in terms of the take, in terms of the presence of mind to, you know, it was a two-touch and tap, and it's in the net. Next thing you know, boom, you're up 2-0. How would you compare the greatness of that goal all around to the one that Alfonso Davies scored a couple of months ago against Panama at BMO, the other big goal of, I would say, this World Cup qualifying for Canada so far?
Yeah, it's they're sort of similar in impact, aren't they, in terms of the moment where the ball goes in the back of the net, you're sort of like shaking your head and you're cheering, you're celebrating, whoever you're watching the game with. But I have to say, technically, this is a much better goal. You know, all round, you think about the pass from Liam Fraser, it's absolutely sensational. If we saw a Modric or, you know, a Xavi back in the day hit a pass like that, we'd be waxing lyrical. It's perfection, the run of David, and then the quickness of mind, the speed of movement, the two touches to set up the difficult finish. You know, he makes it look easy by just kind of half-falling it in his left foot over the goalkeeper for 20 yards into the net, but just magnificent. And while Alfonso Davies' goal was special in terms of the athleticism and the never-say-die attitude and the way that he put it away in the end, this technically is even better and maybe more significant as well. You know, we talked about 37 years, whatever it is, since the last one in Honduras, and how going to Central America was going to be so difficult for this group and was probably their last remaining hurdle in terms of ticking off things that they're capable of. And so were it coming at the time that it did to give them that two-goal cushion was enormous. So I think as we reflect back, it'll probably just shade it, but two outstanding goals.
So, Stephen, you know, John Herdman, obviously a very well-spoken guy. He's been doing interviews all around the world about Canada because, you know, the team is turning heads, you know, beyond these shores. BBC had a big piece And Herdman had a quote before that game last night where he said, we're either going to be the team that did it or the team that blew it. Because obviously they're in the driver's seat right now. But I thought last night there was a moment where it looked like they might blow that game, where Honduras was kind of pressing. And then Milan Borjan, Canada's great goaltender, pulled off one of the great saves that we've seen in a high-pressure soccer moment in this country. What did you make of that moment?
Yeah, big. It was huge. It was the one part of the game, I just referenced it earlier, the 10 minutes, where I felt Canada got a little bit deep and were absorbing too much pressure and couldn't seem to keep the ball and get out. And then, you know, you're just hoping for a big play when that happens. You're hoping for something that can change the momentum and can kind of reset the group. And, you know, who better than one of the most experienced members, a guy who's been playing in Europe for a number of years, and one of the leaders of this group, with Milan Borjan, someone who drives them forward with his attitude and his positivity and his relentless, you know, pursuit for excellence. And, you know, I was pleased for him. It was an outstanding save. The more you look at it, the better it gets. And he had another one a little bit later, which was just about as good. But that first one, and the moment that it came in the game to get down to his left like that and get a strong hand to it was incredible. So, you know, everyone steps up in this team. It's not always about Davies and David or Laren or Hutchinson. It's everyone's had their moment. Everyone's managed to play their part and step up. And I was delighted for one to see Milan have his at such a crucial time. And he's been outstanding in this whole final group stage. He really has. He's took his game on to another level. And it's another example of that determination to just get to this World Cup and to hopefully change a sport and a nation forever.
Steven, you just mentioned the big save by Milan, and that's the one thing where I was going to go is goaltending. It's, for me, again, from the outside watching, it seems like such a tough position just based on the size of the net. And really, if guys pick their corner, there's no opportunity for a goaltender to make a save. So a save at a critical time is so important for not only the confidence of the group, but you can see basically the energy of the team gets raised by maybe an unbelievable save, and you go the other way and basically either score a game winner or, you know, go and win the game based on a massive save.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, soccer, like most sports, is all about momentum, you know, and you start to feel it when it's on your side and you're out there, you're playing, and if you're at home, the crowd get behind you and, you push for the goals. And the opposite happens when you're up against it. It's really difficult to change that. And you're looking for that big momentum changer. And it usually comes from a goalkeeper or a defender. And I think the best goalkeepers are the ones who have that presence, have that kind of understanding of moments and having to make big decisions rather than just kind of staying back there and hoping for the best. And Milan's exactly that kind of guy. He never shirts from coming for crosses or, you know, barking at his defenders or coming at his area wherever he has to. And like I said, having that agility and quality to make a save like that at the important time. So it was big. It really was big. You just felt like they were going to concede a goal at that moment. And while I don't think they were panicking in any way, their sort of energy levels had dropped off. And so that just reinvigorated the group and gave them the belief to go and get that second goal. Once they got that second goal, there was absolutely no turning back. This group was going to come away with the 3 points and set themselves up for, you know, an exciting game on Sunday and two more games in this phase. They really can just solidify this and sort of cement it once and for all and make sure they're on that plane to Qatar.
What do you expect Sunday when the Americans are in Hamilton? They got a draw, these two teams, in Nashville a couple of months ago. How do you see this game playing out this weekend?
Well, I think it's going to be a really exciting one, Brian. When you look at the recent games, obviously Canada beat the US at BMO in 2019, and then there was a couple since then where lost in Orlando and then obviously lost in the Gold Cup in Kansas City. I was involved in all of the games, and I know that, you know, this team felt a little bit slighted by their performances. They felt like they were a better team. They made mistakes, of course, in Orlando, and they made a very costly one at the early stages in Kansas, but they had domination of the ball and they just couldn't find the breakthrough. So they've got a point to prove, and they're sort of champing at the bit to get back at the Americans and to prove that they're a better team. Now, on the flip side of that, I think Greg Berhalter's team will be a little bit annoyed by the publicity that Canada has been getting, and they'll be wanting to come into Hamilton and show that, that they're the top team in North America, and that they're going to stamp their authority. So I just hope it's going to be that attacking game, two sides going at each other and vying for that first spot. And if we do that and it ends up being, you know, end-to-end stuff, then I definitely feel Canada are in an extremely strong position with that quality that they have. But it's going to be, you know, probably the most eagerly anticipated Canada-US soccer match in the men's side in many a year. It's going to be a tremendous encounter, and hopefully the best team win.
Can't wait for it. Enjoy it, Stephen. We always appreciate you finding time for us, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
There's our buddy Stephen Caldwell, our TSN soccer analyst. Canada, U.S. in Hamilton on Sunday. Looking forward to that. Final hour coming up. Al's brother, James Duffy. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.